This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Just like the Maple Leafs, we continue to add organizational depth. This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Welcome back to Jeff Blair Show. Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair all this week. Jeff will be joining us sometime in the next little while. He's going to be a workaholic today. He's actually a workaholic all this week. He's got Baseball Central at 12 noon, and then he's hosting Primetime Sports for Bob McCowan later on this afternoon. But on a day we were going to talk hypothesizing about trade rumors and what may or may not happen for the Toronto Blue Jays, big news overnight. Not confirmed yet by either team. We're waiting for official notices that way. But Troy Tulowitzki, a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, along with reliever, 42-year-old reliever, LaTroy Hawkins, and heading the way of the Colorado Rockies, shortstop Jose Reyes, three prospects, and Jeff Hoffman, Miguel Castro, who we saw pitch a little bit earlier this year for the Jays, and Jesus Tinoco, a prospect from Venezuela, all heading the way of the Colorado Rockies. And we'll talk more baseball in a little while as well. But yesterday, had a nice chat about the Pan Am Games. They came, they went, and it seemed for a lot of people enjoyed the experience, including a lot of people that didn't think they would. And Scott Russell of CBC kicked things off to chat about that. And then it got the whole talk going more about should Toronto get in the running once again for an Olympic bid for 2024. Mayor John Tory was on Primetime Sports yesterday afternoon. One newspaper report has a poll saying now 61% of Torontonians in their poll support a bid for the 2024 Olympics. And somebody that was involved, of course, in the Olympics as well in the sport of sailing, but also 1996 in the bid in Atlanta, was a consultant for Atlanta won, also was a consultant for the 2008 Toronto bid. Paul Henderson joining us this morning. How you doing, Paul?
I'm fine, but you better tell everybody I didn't score that goal.
I know. I was going to say, which was better, Game 6, Game 7, or Game 8? But I've actually missed chatting with you. I used to run into you from time to time about what was going on because you always had your hand on the pulse about different events and different games and what have you. And you know, maybe first off, before we step back about those bids, 2024, changing world, 9/11, I mean, all these other things. What is your thinking when you hear about the interest, whether we should or should not make a bid?
Well, first of all, when I watch the people who are supposed to be experts on the Olympics, they tend to use logic, which most of us would agree is right. But you have to understand the International Olympic Committee has their own logic. For example, they have five continents, Europe, Asia, Africa, Oceania, and the Americas. They consider North and South America as one continent. And we tend to say, oh, well, North America, it's our turn because of Atlanta. We haven't had it since 96. But that's not true. How the IOC looks at it is they have an unwritten rotation, which goes Europe, Americas, somewhere else. Europe, Americas, somewhere else. And if you look at 2008, it went to Beijing, which is somewhere else. Then you have 2012, London, Europe, then Rio 2016, which is Americas, 2020 is Tokyo. So 2024, by that rotation unwritten, it will go to Europe. And on top of that, sometimes the IOC has a conscience on somebody who didn't get the games that they thought should have. 2012, everybody thought it was going to Paris. But I remember sitting beside Bob Elphiston, who ran Sydney, at the presentation in Singapore. And after the Paris presentation, I said, Bob, that was the worst presentation I've ever seen in my life. And then London got up, and I said, that's the best presentation I've ever seen. So what happened was, that I'm sure at least 10 of the IOC votes changed, and London won. So you got two things going against you in 2024. It's Europe's turn, and the IOC feels they have an obligation to Paris.
Well, the other thing, Paul, is you mentioned about the IOC having a conscience, and a lot of people now, because of the IOC and the members and what's been exposed, figure, what's the point of even going in the first place, that it's basically a corrupt organization and let's not even get into it? I don't know what in 96 it seemed like there was elements of that kind of usurped you at the last second when it seemed like Toronto might have a chance for that 96 Olympics. I mean, what's your thinking that way about people's perception that way?
Well, if you get 120 of anything, especially people from all over the world, you're going to have 10% are questionable people. But the majority of the IOC members are outstanding people. People like Jean-Claude Keeley. You couldn't find a finer man than him. Or Princess Anne. Is she ever tough? And does she ever know what she's talking about? And you go down the list. So, yeah, you're going to have some bad ones. But, I don't care. You're going to get 120 Roman Catholic priests, you're going to have 10 are bad. Or even 120 media people, you're going to get 10 that are bad.
I doubt that.
So you always go in on the 10 bad ones. But so I think 2004, both Paris and Rome will have to get out of it before Toronto has a chance.
Okay, but then by September 15th, it's like a poker game. You've got to ante to get in. Should Toronto ante to get in?
Well, let me throw out another thing.
Okay.
When I listen to the politicians here, they say they want housing. They want to correct our transportation problem, which is a disaster. So you can get that, and I'm going to throw out something wild. And you'll first thing say, that's stupid. We should go after the 2026 Winter Olympics. Why? We get all the things that we want to get out of the Summer Games with one-third the cost. And then everybody says, oh, well, we don't have a mountain. There are no mountains in Canada east of the Rockies high enough. That includes Mount St. Anne and Tromblo.
Mm-hmm.
But 60% of the Winter Games are held indoors. We can run that simple. We got all the hotel rooms. We got everything we need. Then with Collingwood, we can run, which is closer to Toronto than Whistler was to Vancouver. You could run all of the snowboarding. It's high enough to run the slalom because you need between 180 and 210 meters, and it's 200 meters. So out of 96 events, there are six we can't run.
What do you do with them? Whistler?
A couple with Lake Placid. The IOC changed the rules. People keep bringing up that IOC changed the rules on doing things, but the reason they did it, that meant that one country could couple with another one. Because they wanted Finland, the Netherlands, Denmark to bid for the Winter Games. But none of those places have hills either high enough. So they can couple with Norway. We could couple with Lake Placid. And think about that.
So we're talking.
We would be coupling with the U.S. We're in East Coast U.S. television time. And we run it in February when nothing's going on. The problem with the Summer Games is you got to fight the British Open golf, or you got to fight Caravana or whatever. Here we got, it's a downtime. It could be terrific. And the two best games I've ever been to have been Calgary and Vancouver.
I was just going to say that. I mean, a legacy of two real successful Winter Olympics, and certainly one a little different in Montreal in 1976 as far as Summer Olympics go. So the 2026 Winter Olympic Games is what you believe Toronto should focus on. That
yep. And I can tell you, I'd like to take credit for that bizarre thought, but it was George Grosz who 15 years ago, when we were traveling through Europe, said, Paul, Toronto should go for the Winter Games because you get everything you want. You get massive television. if we coupled with Lake Placid for the downhill and GS. The only things we can't run are the downhill, the GS, and the Super G. Out of 96 events.
Okay. Well, interesting.
Between Toronto and Collingwood.
Interesting concept, and certainly evoking the name of the late great Baron George Gross. I always am for that. Certainly a giant on the sports scene and a good friend for so many years. Paul Henderson joining us, Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And the Winter Olympic thing, interesting one, and we'll probably get some phone action in the next day or two chatting about it, throwing it out there. But I want to go back to just
look. Another problem.
What's that?
With what we're talking about
the summer games. Okay.
You got the big $325 million swimming complex at Scarborough.
Right.
It's 2,500 seats. You need 18,000 seats in the Aquatic Center.
Mm-hmm.
The York University track and field, it went very well. 10,000 seats. You need 80,000 seats.
Understood.
The opening ceremonies, you need 80 to 100,000 seats. The Winter Games, you only need 45 to 50,000. Mm-hmm. You can use the Rogers Center, which worked very, very well for the Pan Am Games.
Yeah.
So if you sit back, and at first you think I'm nuts, and then when you take a look at it all, you say, maybe that isn't so stupid.
Well, what I want to ask you, just to stick on the summer a little bit there, and certainly it is understood, a lot of facilities if they're going to go ahead, but just 96 and 2008, you were involved in both, and just the memories of both, Atlanta coming so close, and then the other one, I guess in Beijing at some point, did you realize it was a foregone conclusion it was going there? What was your experiences like?
In 96, there were two things going. It was the 100th anniversary of the Olympics, so some people thought it was going to Athens. But then the Berlin Wall came down, and all the Eastern Europeans had no idea what was going to happen to their life. So it became obvious it was going to North America. So we had Breadnought Circuses, which originally Jack Layton was 100% on our side, but he decided to run for mayor, so he had to be against everything that Eggleton was for. And he just drove us nuts, and so we were in deep trouble. Atlanta had Coca-Cola, and so we were fighting Breadnought Circuses against Coca-Cola. That wasn't a very fair fight. And then what happened is that they called a provincial election, and Bob Ray took over instead of David Peterson, and Bob Ray didn't know what was going on because he was new to the thing, and he sent people who embarrassed us in Tokyo. So I knew we were going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
In the 2008 bid, what happened was that Sydney won 2000, but that was supposed to go to Beijing. But the IOC members decided that they prefer to go to Sydney, and Sydney beat Beijing by 2 votes.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Ranch promised Beijing that before he left, he'd get them in the Olympics. And Dick Pound was very strong for Beijing, too. And so the last thing that Sam Ranch did before he left was made sure that Beijing won the 2008 bid. There was no way Toronto had a hope in that time. And that's kind of, you know, when you talk about the Pan Am Games, Jim Watson, who's now the mayor of Ottawa, who was the head of Minister of Health Promotion, and McGuinty liked the idea about going for the Pan Am Games, which I suggested to them, and then they sent me to Mexico to see if we had a chance in January of 2008. And Mario Vasquez Reyne said, yep, Toronto, we want you to win, but keep the costs under control. And so the basic point about that is don't bid unless you got a pretty good chance of winning. And I think 2024 is difficult, very difficult. 2028 is America's chance. And 2026 would really be fun. I think the bonuses we'd get out of the Winter Games would be better than we get now out of the Summer Games, but that's flip a coin, I guess.
Well, you shall find out. Hey, Paul, great catching up with you. Really appreciate your insight and thoughts, and thanks for making time this morning.
Okay, thank you very much. And sit back. I know my ideas sometimes are bizarre, but they're not a stranger, you might think.
Okay, will do. Paul Henderson joining us. He was the leader of the 1996 Toronto Olympic bid, was a consultant on the 2008 bid, and rather than going for the Summer Olympics in 2024, he feels we should be going, we Toronto, an area for the 2026 Winter Olympics. So a little bit of diversion there, but with the Pan Am Games just ending, a nice kind of diversion as people are wondering where Toronto should head in that direction. But since this morning and heading up to the trade deadline on Friday, baseball trade talk has been on the front burner topic. And with the Toronto Blue Jays pulling a big 6-player trade with the Colorado Rockies, again, still to be officially confirmed by both teams at this point, that's been the big story. Ryan Fagan, national baseball writer for the Sporting News, joining us. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing well. Exciting times up there, huh?
Well, it is, and I was kidding when we came on earlier that the timing of it all, the only one I remember comparable was Tim Johnson, the manager, being let go overnight at training camp, spring training, because he got in deep trouble with all those lies the year before. So the morning show had that news. You're not used to waking up to hearing this story. What did you think when you first heard the story?
I was surprised. You know, I mean, obviously, we've expected the Blue Jays to make a big move or two for a long time now, you know, not just this year, but years past. And we expected the Blue Jays to obviously go out and add to the rotation or to the bullpen. And, you know, that still might happen, but I don't think anyone really saw the Blue Jays going out and adding Troy Tulowitzki. I mean, Troy Tulowitzki's been kind of this out-of-reach trade prospect for so many teams. So many fan bases wanted him. You know, he was talked about as the guy that could replace Derek Jeter with the Yankees, and he was talked about as this ultimate trade prize that all these teams wanted but weren't able to satisfy the Rockies' demands for what they were asking for him. And so for a team that doesn't need a bat to go out and be the team that actually swings the deal for this guy that was deemed to be almost, you know, almost impossible to trade for, yeah, I mean, I admit it was quite a surprise.
And for those just tuning in, it was Troy Tulowitzki and a 42-year-old reliever, LaTroy Hawkins, heading to the Toronto Blue Jays, going to Colorado, Jose Reyes, and prospects Jeff Hoffman, Miguel Castro, and Jesus Tinoco, heading the way of the Colorado Rockies. And Ryan Fagan joining us, talking baseball with Gord Stellick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And, you know, Ryan, when I took your tact as well, thinking about, okay, Jays are going after pitching, what the needs and what have you. Then I'm trying to think, why would Colorado move Troy Tulowitzki, who's, you know, signed till 2020, still great numbers, batting 300. And I wondered, I used a bit of a hockey comparison here in Toronto that the Toronto Maple Leafs traded Phil Kessel, for example. He had a big contract, but when you decide, you know what, we got to tear it down, then there's no point keeping this contract anymore. And you look at Colorado's situation this year, and maybe is that what they said? You know, something, we thought we were going to be further ahead. We're not. And when that happens, it's probably irrelevant about Troy Tulowitzki or something, or his contract in that way?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's kind of the same theory we've seen with a couple other teams. Like when the Atlanta Braves traded their closer Craig Kimbrel before the season, you know, they knew that they weren't going to be a contender in 2015. So why would you pay a premium price for a closer to save games when you're not really going to be in the playoff conversation? So you have this valuable trade chip that's worth more to another team than it is to you. And I think that's kind of a situation. The Rockies tried to build around Troy Tulowitzki and Carlos Gonzalez. Those guys were injured a lot. It never quite happened. They never had the pitching to support them. So they figure if we're going to start rebuilding, we need to do it in a different way. And I think that's why they were so keen on the pitching prospects that they got from the Blue Jays, guys who have high ceilings, who can be good starters, who throw the ball really, really hard. You know, in Colorado, you have to have a good fastball if you're going to succeed in Coors Field. And the guys that they got from the Jays do that. And, you know, I think most people expect them to wind up flipping Jose Reyes in another deal because he doesn't make a lot of sense there. He makes the same amount of sense there as Troy Tulowitzki did right now. So I think most people expect them to trade him. It might be a situation where he plays two games for the Rockies and then gets up again before the deadline or after the year. But, yeah, I think that's what it is. I mean, the fact that they're trading Troy Tulowitzki is no comment at all on Troy Tulowitzki. It's a comment on where the Rockies see themselves as a franchise, and Tulowitzki became a luxury they either couldn't afford or didn't need to afford, and that's why they moved him.
Well, the word injury prone, some callers talked about that earlier, and I don't know how you gauge it or not. Is that a concern for you with Troy Tulowitzki?
Well, the reality is, you know, in his nine full years in the majors, he's played more than 126 games three times. You know, so there's no denying that he's had problems staying healthy. It's not chronic things, though. It's not like he has this back issue, or it's not like he's a pitcher and has an elbow that is, you know, like Jaime Garcia with the Cardinals. You know, I mean, I think it's been different things, and it almost seems like he's just it's almost just bad luck, it seems like, the things that keep happening to him. And is that something that's going to keep that's going to continue to happen? Well, I mean, it's hard to say that. You know, it's hard to say a guy's going to get a broken hand, you know, 3 years in a row. Not that that's what's happened to him, but, you know, for an example. So I think when he's healthy and when he's on the field, he's amazing. I mean, he's the kind of guy, and this is not an exaggeration, he has Hall of Fame talent. He has the ability, if he could stay healthy, to be in the Hall of Fame. That's how good he can be. I mean, you look at his numbers, and he's a consistent 300 hitter. He could hit well over 300. He has a good on-base percentage. His slugging is fantastic. Defensively, as a shortstop, he's an outstanding shortstop. You know, he may not have the best range in baseball, but he's a guy that is going to get everything that is hit his way, and he's going to get to more baseballs than a lot of other guys are going to do. And all these things are why so many teams, even though he's been injured often, that's why so many teams still wanted him. And I think it's one of those things that if Troy Tulowitzki is playing on your team, when he puts together two or three healthy years in a row, it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful thing for a franchise.
Ryan Fagan, national baseball writer for The Sporting News, joining Gord Stelick on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. How do you gauge prospects? I mean, we all are experts in every sport now because we can read about it, devour stats, devour analytics, and in general about giving up prospects. In this case, Jeff Hoffman. And I was using, Ryan, earlier a comparable just about Kyle Drabek, who was the pièce de resistance of the Roy Halladay trade and just was waived by the Jays this spring and is now AAA in Chicago White Sox organization. So it's always a bit of a crapshoot. How do you gauge it, making it an educated crapshoot?
It's hard. I mean, it's not easy because you just don't know. You know, with a guy like Hoffman, you know, I mean, nowadays, so many pitchers are going through Tommy John surgery. It's almost like when you get through your first Tommy John surgery, it's almost a plus, you know, which sounds just insane to say, but it can be looked at that. And Hoffman's gone through his first Tommy John surgery and he's come back and he's playing very well. He's throwing very well. I mean, that's the reason the Blue Jays got him when they did. If he wasn't injured, if he didn't go through that, he would have been in the conversation for the number one pick overall. That's the kind of talent that he had. And he's shown that he has rebounded from that. You know, he's not throwing as hard necessarily, but he's on his way back to throwing as hard. So you have a guy that has a good ceiling, and you feel like if you're the Rockies, you feel like he's kind of gone through that first hiccup he had to in his career. But there's no accurate way, and I think that's why you see major leaguers sometimes, you'll talk to them and they'll admit that they get frustrated when they see their productive teammates get traded for guys who are a couple of years away from the majors, because it doesn't seem like that is equal value. And it's, you know, it's very realistic that, you know, the guys that the Rockies got in 3 years could be, you know, could form the basis of their rotation. Hoffman could be a number one guy. The other two guys could be in that conversation. Or it's, you know, it's also not out of the realm of possibility that none of them will be in the majors in 3 years. You just don't know, and I think that's why there's always so much speculation. Certain franchises put a higher value on prospects. Certain franchises put higher value. You know, the Giants have always been this way. They put higher value on guys who are actually in the majors. And that's why it's always so interesting to see how these trades go down at the deadline, and you can really tell what different franchises think about the quote-unquote prospects and what their potential could be.
Ryan, you mentioned about in Colorado, you see now Jose Reyes being a piece they could flip by July 31st. What about in Toronto now? A number of callers wondering if Edwin Kernashian now is a guy they might flip.
Yeah, I mean, the Blue Jays still have to find pitching. I mean, they have to somehow, some way, because the rotation that they have right now is not going to catch the Yankees. And, will it catch the second wild card? I mean, you have to stay ahead of the Orioles and teams that are there. But, you know, if you're looking at it, you feel like you can probably catch the Twins, who have been struggling and really have exceeded everyone's expectations at this point. So if that's the team you're chasing, you feel like you have a good chance of doing that. Can the rotation as it's set up now win in the postseason? You know, not very. It can't go deep unless the lineup stays the same and winds up scoring 9 runs a game. But that's going to be an issue for them to do that. So I think I don't think they're done. I think there's a reason this happened on Tuesday, and we still have a couple more days before the trade deadline on the 31st. I think there's going to be something else happening. And if there's not, I think people will really look at this week and think, what were the Blue Jays doing?
Well, busy times for everyone, busy times for you. Thanks very much for making time for us, Ryan.
I always enjoy it. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Ryan Fagan from the National Baseball Writer from the Sporting News. By the way, Greg's on, the one and only. No idea what kind of suit he'll be wearing, but it'll be radio. He'll be joining us at 11 a.m. to get his spin on the blockbuster trade between the Colorado Rockies and the Toronto Blue Jays. Jeff Blair will be hosting Baseball Central as well. They'll be chatting about that. Him and Mr. Barker will be chatting about that from noon to one, but we also hope to get Jeff in a little bit before to talk about the big deal as Troy Tulowitzki becomes a member of the Toronto Blue Jays. Gord Stellick with you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair. Hot, steamy baseball weather out there, and that'll be the way it is tonight at the Rogers Center. Of course, all the action, the Toronto Blue Jays taking on the Philadelphia Phillies, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. The big news, the trade, the unexpected trade. Troy Tulowitzki, now a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, and Jose Reyes among those heading the way of the Colorado Rockies. Jeff Blair will be joining us in a few minutes' time, but then we'll get back. We'll open the phone lines because no shortage of Sportsnet 590 The Fan callers, listeners, about their thoughts. 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Greg Zahn also will be weighing in at 11 a.m. and his thoughts on the deal. Joe Siddle kicked things off back at 9 o'clock this morning. And like everybody, unusual timing for this to happen in the wee hours of the morning, but that's the way it unfolded. And Troy Tulowitzki, a member of the Toronto Blue Jays, he's signed through the year 2020. Also getting LaTroy Hawkins, who is 42 years old, his 11th Major League Baseball team, but some feeling he can help a bit in long relief for the Toronto Blue Jays the rest of the way. Jose Reyes heading to the Colorado Rockies. As we chatted earlier, a lot of people seem to think he'll be flipped somewhere else by the deadline this Friday. And three prospects, the blue chipper, Jeff Hoffman, a 22-year-old. Miguel Castro, a 20-year-old, who we saw pitch a little bit, tried out in the closer role earlier in the season for the Toronto Blue Jays. And Jesus Tinoco, a prospect from Venezuela, who right now doesn't have the great stats, but still is considered to have a considerable upside. So they all head the way of the Colorado Rockies. Reyes, 32 years old. Tulowitzki, 30 years old, batting .300 right now. So been impressive statistics. And we talked earlier last hour, Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News, his take about it. And he was big on Tulowitzki again. Only three times in the last 9 years has he played more than 126 games. So there has always been that injury-prone factor that some callers mentioned were concerned a little bit earlier on. So 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Gord Stellick here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and we'll try to slide a call or two in about thinking about the trade as it's a time to resonate with our listeners. Going back 2005, that was always a niggling point about Ricky Romero being picked just ahead of Tulowitzki in the Major League Baseball draft, and it seemed like the Jays had missed in making that pick, and then Romero started to really develop and evolve as a starting pitcher, and you felt it was kind of a wash, and unfortunately he's just, you know, slid away everywhere, Ricky Romero. But that draft, Justin Upton went first to the Arizona Diamondbacks, Alex Gordon second to the Kansas City Royals, Jeff Clement third to the Seattle Mariners, Ryan Zimmerman fourth to the Washington Nationals, Ryan Braun fifth to the Milwaukee Brewers, sixth was Ricky Romero to the Jays, and seventh was Troy Tulowitzki to the Colorado Rockies. Andrew McCutchen went 11th overall to the Pittsburgh Pirates. So that kind of draft. Colby Rasmus went a little bit later on. He went 28th to the St. Louis Cardinals. 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Franklin in Oakville. Hey, Franklin.
Hey, Gord. Good to talk to you again.
Likewise.
How's it going?
What's going great?
Great. So I haven't followed Tulowitzki closely, but one thought that comes to my mind, and I got 2 points. First of all, when we hear missed games, I wonder how many of those games he would have played if his team had significant playoff opportunities. So here in Toronto, how many times have we shut Bautista down in August or September, where this year we saw Bautista play through a destroyed arm because the team had playoff hopes, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
So it's one thing. Now you look back 5 years later and you say, oh, look how many games he missed. But would he have missed that many games? Like, what were those injuries? I don't know. It may be something to take into consideration. And the other point I have is what's kind of been mentioned all morning about pitchers. I'm sick and tired of hearing about people call up and talk about prospects like they're the next Roy Halladay. They might be the next Ricky Romero, and the only way you'll ever know is 5 years after they've been pitching. Marcus Stroman is exciting. I love him, but we still don't know. He could be the next Drew Hutchison because we were all excited about Hutchison 2 years ago. And Hutchison might turn his career around and all of a sudden be a stud in a couple of years. I just think pitching is such a crapshoot that you don't bank on it. You load up with good pitchers, you hope some of them work, you trade some of them, and it's an incomplete science. And who knows what move is still left to be done. Is there any chance they turn around and flip Tulowitzki to someone else for pitching? I don't know. Like, it's just, there's just too many variables at play.
Well, and to answer that last question first there, there's been no official confirmation by either organization at this point, so we're awaiting that. But the understanding is Tulowitzki gets a $2 million bonus for relocation bonus, and now he actually has a no-trade. I guess once he gets traded, he has a full no-trade clause in the contract. Maybe he'd want to go somewhere else. He wanted to go to the San Francisco Giants. Apparently that's where he would. If he had to go somewhere, that would have been his choice. So we'll find out more about that. But no, he's not being acquired to be flipped by Friday. We had some earlier callers and some earlier thoughts that this does change the hand that Alex Anthopoulos is dealt, that maybe Edwin Encarnacion is somebody that now you look at being a little bit more expendable and possibly a guy that you can trade on Friday that way. By the way, in talking about Tulowitzki, and mentioning his ailments have been a little bit different. That's the one good point. We talked last hour to Ryan Fagan from the Sporting News, and he mentioned that it wasn't like a chronic shoulder or chronic knee. It's the baseball version of, say, Joffrey Lupul, that the good news was Joffrey Lupul's injuries were always different. The bad news was he just keeps getting hurt. So whatever, 6-1, half dozen of the other, in a lot of ways that way. So that is the understanding about Troy Tulowitzki and his health status for a guy that has not played more than 100, has only played more than 126 games, 3 of his last 9 seasons. So, focal point today, Baseball Central coming up. Jeff Blair, Kevin Barker at 12 noon. Of course, Jeff then doing primetime sports and gracious enough to join us now. Of all days for me to be doing the Jeff Blair Show at like 9 a.m., you would have, that would be the one day of the year you live for.
I'm glad that you had something to talk about.
I know. Well,
I'm glad that we all have something to talk about.
Because you wake up in the morning and try to, and some days you're trying to formulate, okay, what's a hot button topic? And then first the timing. And Jeff, the only thing I remember was that, God rest his soul, he's not departed, but the Tim Johnson story broke in the wee hours because Fergie Oliver was at spring training, told Pat Marsden. And so we woke up to the Blue Jay manager not being able to rehabilitate his status with the team after all the lies from the previous year. This was, I don't remember many more deals, because this wasn't like a deadline. It wasn't like 11:59 last night.
AJ Burnett's signing at the winter meetings by J.P. Ricciardi was probably the closest, because, well, J.P. gave us the time at the Globe, the scoop, and they got the deal done around, I want to say, 11:35, because it was right on deadline.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is obviously different when you're making a trade than a signing. But, yeah, it's I still haven't quite figured it out yet. I don't know if the Jays are any closer to a playoff spot this morning than they were yesterday. Tulowitzki's an upgrade. There's, I think, defensively he's an upgrade. He's a couple of years younger. LaTroy Hawkins gives them something they haven't had in the bullpen. I mean, to me, that's the net gain right now as you sit and look at it. So that suggests to me that Alex probably has another deal cooking. I mean, the one thing to keep in mind about Troy Tulowitzki and where he really differs from Jose Reyes is Jose Reyes can't play shortstop anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Troy Tulowitzki still can. Jose Reyes will never, ever, ever be convinced that he can't play shortstop anymore. Troy Tulowitzki has spoken in the past about understanding that at some point he's probably going to have to move off shortstop. Maybe that's first base, whatever. And I think that's important when you're talking about a guy you have under control for a long term. He does have a no-trade clause that kicks in now,
mm-hmm.
but that's kind of irrelevant. It might be one of the most irrelevant no-trade clauses in baseball because, most people have assumed that Troy Tulowitzki at some point wanted to get to New York in his career. And, I mean, if things don't work out, there's not going to be an issue between him and the Blue Jays. Nobody's going to hold anybody hostage. So I think Alex Anthopoulos has probably gotten rid of an issue in Jose Reyes that there was just no answer for. I mean, the Jays went to him early in the year and said, we want you to play less. We want you to DH a couple of times. We'd like you to play less shortstop. And no. So I think Alex, and just reading a piece Ken Rosenthal did, Gord, Alex first approached Colorado about this deal in the winter. So that makes me think that he had an idea that the relationship with Reyes probably wasn't going to end well.
Well, it's interesting. So you say about approaching Colorado in the winter, because I'm trying to look at Colorado, a disappointing season on the field. I don't know what they were.
Yeah, they're crap.
Yeah, so
they're
going to
be crap for a few years.
So basically, I was using the Phil Kessel analogy that all of a sudden when the Toronto Maple Leafs changed their mindset, this contract didn't make sense right now. In Kessel's case, is that kind of the way it is with the Colorado and Tulowitzki?
Colorado's needed to rebuild for a couple of years. The difference is, Troy Tulowitzki is a cornerstone player. In terms of the fans, in terms of the franchise, he's a different guy than Phil Kessel. Nobody was agitating to get Troy Tulowitzki out of Denver. Troy Tulowitzki, depending on who you talk to, would have been okay staying there. So I think in that way it's a little different. But the Rockies really do have to do a major rebuild. They've got to start their rebuild with pitching. And I think they've done pretty well here. I mean, I could tell you 3 days ago, I had a guy in the Blue Jays organization say that he said, I just can't see us parting with Hoffman. Obviously Stroman's off the table, but he said, we'd do just about anybody but Hoffman. Norris, we'd do Norris in a heartbeat. So that indicates to me a couple of things. One, I need a new source. But two, the Jays, very quietly under Alex, have done a really good job of talking up their prospects. And I know scouts get out to see these guys. But Franklin Barreto, the guy that was part of the Josh Donaldson deal, the Jays don't think there's a chance in hell that he can play shortstop at the major leagues. But they kept him as a shortstop in the minors because it increased his value as an offensive player at that position. And I'm wondering if maybe the, my God, Jeff Hoffman's the next greatest thing spin that the organization has kind of funneled to a lot of us covering the team. I wonder now if maybe it wasn't a little BS.
Well, that's a great part about the game nowadays, about average fans now are weighing in on players they've never seen pitch. About a prospect versus another prospect, and how can you trade this guy? Yet I've never seen him. But there's analytics, there's these reports, there's this, that,
there's
the other.
Baseball America saying the guy's a second, second-rated prospect in your organization.
So within your organization now, you say, let's take that, run with it, and put the balloon up there even bigger to get excited on a guy, just as you mentioned, that we have no major league plans for.
Brian Burke said in Primetime Sports one time when I was sitting in with McCowan, absolutely general managers use the media. Of course we use social media. Why wouldn't you? It's free. And, you know, instead of me calling up a GM to float a stupid rumor, I'll let, you know, somebody else, one of the insiders, do it. It's fair game.
The other point I was just thinking about things about in general is if you get winning again and in the playoffs, and if Troy Tulowitzki helps that way, then much like the gravy years that led to two World Series champions, trading a Jeff Kent was irrelevant, even though he got traded twice more before he became MVP material in San Francisco. But that becomes irrelevant because you're winning on the field. You piss and moan when you keep being out of the playoffs, and then you see the other guy somewhere else, and you go, well, we failed on both counts.
Yeah, I mean, the organization's fan base, the Jays fan base, they've got this kind of anal thing happening in a couple of areas. One, they don't ever want Alex Anthopoulos to spend money on a closer because, oh my God, BJ Ryan was the worst contract in team history, which it wasn't. And secondly, they live in fear of Noah Syndergaard, which is stupid. Noah Syndergaard may turn out to be a great pitcher. The Jays with Noah Syndergaard aren't any closer to the playoffs this year. They're not any closer than they were last year. This year, let me rephrase that. With Noah Syndergaard last year, it wasn't going to make any difference. They weren't going to get any closer to the playoffs. But people in this city have a fear about spending money on a closer and getting rid of a prospect. And I mean, I'm sorry, you can't live that way in a city with a team that can't sign a free agent.
Well, you know, the closer...
Unless the Jays sit down and finally say that Aaron Sanchez is their guy.
You know, the closer thing, again, continue. I mean, you go back to Bill Cottle. That was the first failed closer. And then all of a sudden, you get Henke and Ward.
Yeah.
And then since then, I was at an opening day game against
Billy
the
Koch
Chicago White Sox.
Billy Koch had some pretty good years.
He did. But Mike Timlin gives up a home run the ninth inning game one. Then Billy Koch for a little bit. But you talked with Kevin Barker about it yesterday. Steve Delabar is the poster boy for, I don't get it, All-Star one year.
Well, it's just you know what he is? He's, hey, we'll catch lightning in a bottle and that'll work. And it's, you know, if you want to be like the Kansas City Royals and the St. Louis Cardinals, and they're the teams that are way ahead of the curve, Houston to a certain degree, then you've got to have your own closer. And you've got to get a young arm, say you're the closer, and have that guy for 6 years. Instead of this, going into spring training and bringing in 30 guys and hoping that one of them can do something. Anyhow.
Well, no shortage of topics, for sure. A busy day for you.
It'll be fun. Isn't done, I don't think.
Think Edwin Encarnacion moves on?
Oh, I absolutely think Edwin's in play right now. I think Devin Travis is in play, too, to be quite honest.
Okay, well, we'll let you go play for another hour.
I plan on it.
And then be back at 12 noon, Baseball Central, also Primetime Sports. Jeff, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Jeff Blair, you'll hear a lot of him all afternoon on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, of course, talking about the big Toronto Blue Jay Colorado Rocky baseball trade. That'll be our topic with Greg Zahn to kick off the next hour. Gord Stellick in for Jeff Blair on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.